WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
The city's chief executive is back, answering Chicago's questions. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Once a month, Mayor Brandon Johnson stops by the WBEZ studios to answer your questions. With Chicago's ongoing budget woes, the mayor's still warning of possible layoffs for city employees this year. You might remember he raised those same concerns in the heat of the budget battle. We'll dive into that, as well as public safety and big questions about jobs, programs for kids, and transit. We'll find out more about Johnson's 2026 priorities, trade-offs, and what comes next at City Hall. Now let's dive in. We saw anti-ICE protests across the country over the weekend, several of them in our region, from the suburbs to Michigan Avenue downtown. And this after the shooting deaths of Renee Good in Minneapolis and Keith Porter, a Los Angeles resident, by ICE agents. And yesterday, Chicago joined the Illinois Attorney General in a lawsuit over the immigration crackdown. So I started by asking the mayor what exactly the lawsuit is alleging. Here's Brandon Johnson.
Well, first of all, you know, I spoke with Mayor Fry last week regarding the latest tragedy that has been caused by the Trump administration. This is clearly not about immigration enforcement. It's not about safety. As I've said repeatedly, this is about terrorizing and dividing communities. This lawsuit is another effort to provide some real check and balance to this administration. We've used many different tools, as you know, executive orders, legislation, and of course, litigation. What this lawsuit will do, it will ultimately help us strengthen and codify the executive orders that we put in place. Mm-hmm. So for instance, ICE-free zones that I put forth an executive order to prevent ICE from establishing and setting up its operation in public spaces that are owned by the city of Chicago. This will help strengthen these sensitive zones or vulnerable zones, churches, schools, hospitals, and the like, that would prevent ICE from establishing its raids on these spaces. It also will challenge the federal government to essentially stop releasing indiscriminately tear gas, in crowds and on mm-hmm. people. We know that has happened repeatedly, whether it's on, you know, whether it was during a parade for Halloween, on our police officers. So many of the measures that we have put forth through executive orders, we believe that this lawsuit will help strengthen our ability to hold this administration accountable.
Yeah, essentially it's alleging the Trump administration has overseen unlawful actions, abusive enforcement tactics, and repeated rights violations committed by immigration agents.
Of which they have, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's no question that the visceral approach that this administration has had against working people has not only caused tremendous harm, mm-hmm. in some cases, irreparable harm, particularly now that it's costing people their lives.
Let's get into Chicago's budget. Since the last time you were here with me on In the Loop, a rival budget plan to yours passed in the city council. You chose not to veto it, and you've been warning, that the revenue projections could be off and that the city could see layoffs on the horizon. Walk us through your concerns there.
Well, those concerns still remain. You know, the budget that I have proposed, 98% of it was intact, right? So we were able to protect the people of Chicago, as I promised, to ensure that we're going to invest in young people, invest in mental health, invest in community safety, invest in programming that's going to continue to build the safest, most affordable big city in America. The point of contention from a handful of alders was simply around, for the last portion of the revenue, should we, you know, challenge big corporations and the ultra-rich to put more skin in the game, or do we project that revenue through selling off of debt and, you know, sending private debt collectors after working people, right? Mm. They decided to go that route. There were also some projections that they made with their revenue that don't line up with our projections. And so what I've put forward and what I will continue to do are measures in place to not only analyze and assess our revenue streams as they come in month to month, but I'm also going to continue to work with city council to find ways in which we can truly balance the interest of working people and not on their backs.
I'm glad
now,
you brought
that up. Am I still concerned about potential mid-year layoffs? Of course I am, as I said before.
You said you'll continue to work with city council. What is the relationship like right now? Because we did see that you had even folks that you considered allies found fault with the process and how it went.
It's a working relationship, right? I mean, look, I don't believe a rubber stamp city council has ever benefited the city of Chicago, right? It hasn't, you know, whether it's, you know, a bad parking meter deal or the fact that mental health clinics were shut down and closed, right? We have seen rubber stamp city councils that have caused tremendous harm to working people. What I've said is it's not just enough to have a strong city council. You have to have a responsible one. And so that work doesn't stop because we disagree over 1.67% over the overall budget.
Yeah. Let's jump to the phone lines because we've got people waiting, Mayor. First up is Raheem in Inglewood. Hi, Raheem. Good morning.
Hey. Hi, good morning. How are you doing?
Doing good. Your question for Mayor Johnson.
Mayor Johnson about the unemployment rate in Chicago, specifically in trades. So I think the unemployment rate for African Americans is about 20% versus white people, Caucasian, about 5%. I feel I'm a carpenter in the trades and the union. And I feel like any job I go to is probably one or two black guys per job site. That's kind of crazy. And it's like, I don't have a chance to even get a start in the trade for my first year. So I don't have been on like two big job sites. I've been in union for 2 years almost.
So I want to get an answer to your question there, Raheem. Thank you so much for calling. So he's talking about how it's hard to find a job. He was citing there the difference in unemployment rate between our black residents and white residents. Your thoughts, Mayor?
Yeah, and I think what he also was lifting up, thank you, Raheem, for your question and your work. He also lifted up the fact that within the trades, we don't have an equitable distribution of opportunities.
Right.
And so one of the things that I did in my last budget was, as you know, we released the largest TIF surplus in the history of Chicago for $500 million to return back to our public schools, in part so that we can continue to strengthen our school district to provide stronger pipelines for young people to even engage in the trades. We have pilot programs that we have started under my administration within streets and sanitation to create a pathway for good labor union jobs. But also we're investing in our city colleges. One of the things that I am encouraged by is that the number one subgroup of enrollees and registrants since I've been in office at our city colleges are young black men. With $20 billion of new investments, we're talking about thousands of construction jobs that will be coming down the pipeline. It's why it's so critical that we invest in our public institutions, our K through 12, our community colleges, to help young people get earlier access to trades so that as those construction jobs come online, we have the workforce to be able to participate and benefit from these investments.
Thank you, Mayor. Next up is Jeff in Oak Park. Good morning, Jeff. What's your question for the mayor?
Hello, Mayor. Hello, WBEZ. Thank you for taking my call. Hi. Mayor, I work in construction. Chicago chronically lists lowest on lists of cranes, tower cranes in the city. I'm looking at a list right now with Miami at 33. We trail Austin, Denver, Honolulu, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, New York, Seattle, and Washington, D.C. What do you attribute this lack of tower cranes year after year to? And do you see it as an issue with businesses not wanting to come to the city?
Well, thank you for that question. So first of all, we do have 6 cranes in the air right now, and we have 18 more confirmed. Let me just say that our economy has shifted dramatically. Cranes is not the only indication of economic prowess, right? So we have to like remove ourselves from an antiquated idea about what vibrancy looks like. You know, what we do know is that, you know, whether it's the 3.5 million visitors that have come through the city of Chicago last summer, the largest influx of visitors over the course of a summer, the fact that violence is going down in the city of Chicago, we're building more affordable homes by converting downtown office space that is no longer used for the type of economy that existed pre-pandemic to convert those into housing. And so what I'm simply offering is that, you know, since I've been in office, we're talking about $20 billion of new investments, right? Whether it's PsiQuantum, the 1901 project on the west side of Chicago, building a new hospital, Advocate Healthcare on the far south side of Chicago, of course, the brand new stadium for Chicago Fire is coming into the loop. And again, the conversion of downtown office spaces to housing and mm-hmm. building more affordable homes. We have one of the most diverse economies in the world. In fact, not one industry comprises more than 13% of our overall GDP. So whether it's logistics, life sciences, you know, the fact that our technology and green technology, of course, is starting to expand. So what I'm simply offering is that cranes is only one indicator of the strength of an economy. And in fact, if you're only relying upon cranes, just like in New York finances or just like in Hollywood entertainment, those economies do not have the type of diverse infrastructure to be able to hold the transformation that is obviously here in Chicago.
You mentioned a few of the projects that are underway here. I'm wondering how we balance that. How do we balance investing in downtown and investing in neighborhoods?
Yeah, it's a great question. So PsiQuantum, southeast side of Chicago, a working class community where the steel mills once existed. No investment there in 30 plus years. Now we have an entire campus with a new form of technology that's going to, you know, attract more business there. Same thing in that same neighborhood, a hospital is being built. That's the first hospital that's about to be built in Chicago, and God knows when. The 1901 project, that's on the west side of Chicago. Obviously, people think that I have a bias towards the west side of Chicago, but we're not going to argue that. You know, the west side is the best side. We love you, south side, northwest, southeast. But those projects are right in the neighborhoods. The same thing with the South Loop. There's that land has been vacant for decades, right? So that investment and that development is happening in the neighborhoods, southeast, south side of Chicago, the west side of Chicago, along with the resurgence of our downtown footprint.
Last week, Mayor, your chief financial officer, Jill Jaworski, announced that she's going to be leaving and she's coming here to Navy Pier to be CFO. It's a tough time, you think, right? To be without the financial counsel of someone that you trust?
Look, Jill Jaworski has done an incredible job serving in my administration. Her time certainly predates me. She has been a long time public servant. I think her, you know, her ability is really goes without saying. You know how powerful her presentation has been, and I've enjoyed her counsel. And we will find someone, right? And so,
what's the transition period going to look like?
You know, we'll go through a full vetting process and listen, her moving on, I think, is to work at Navy Pier is a good thing for Navy Pier. And there are plenty of people in place that will fill those shoes as we look to find someone to work in that capacity permanently.
Back to the phones. Here's Frank in Back of the Yards. Hi, Frank. What's your question?
Hi. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
I have a question. Have you ever considered having a cleanest block in the city of Chicago, have a competition for that? I thought of that because I lived in Back of the Yards and I used to clean up after all my neighbors' bottles and cans and stuff like that. And I thought that type of competition would obviously maybe reduce the rodent population we have here in Chicago because people leave out food and stuff like that. And maybe Streets and Sanitation can run this because I know their trucks have cameras on them. Maybe they can go down the streets or whatever. And then maybe award the winner with a free block party provided by the city of Chicago with food and drinks and bouncy houses and all that stuff. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for that question, Frank, and thank you for your commitment to the neighborhoods.
There.
Yeah. Look, one of the things we are looking to do this summer is to make stronger investments in our block clubs. I believe it's to Frank to your point. Not only does it bring neighborhood pride, but it also addresses I believe some of the disconnect that exists within our communities. That if we make those connections, it will drive down violence. We have done these Take Back the Block initiatives where we spend an entire afternoon on a block in a neighborhood doing just that, boarding up abandoned buildings, challenging these banks that own these buildings to take better care of them, and then just showing up with resources. So, Frank, you have given me yet another idea to think about of how we can strengthen that support through our Take Back the Block initiative. And then, of course, here's the last part, the idea of a winner. That is true Chicago style, right? We hadn't thought about that with the Take Back the Block initiative, but you've given me something to think about, and I will seriously consider that, Frank.
Before we take a pause, Mayor, I want to circle back to the budget here and just talk about a quote that you said, and I want to hear more from you. You warned that unless we find real solutions, Chicagoans face the threat of critical service cuts. You still worried about that?
Yes.
What cuts?
I mean, look, whether it's, the day-to-day expectation of services being provided, that includes, community safety. These are public employees that work and serve in these various capacities. And, my effort to strengthen this city is one that never ends, right? And so as much as I'm concerned about it, we are putting forth actions and we're going to continue to monitor this budget as we've always have over the course month to month to be able to assess where we actually are. But, community safety is that portion of our budget for the community safety is the highest portion of our budget. And so when we start talking about cuts and layoffs, it's hard to imagine a world where those services won't have some impact on safety.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
John is standing by in Lincoln Park. Hi, John. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
I had a question regarding the ICE raids. Number one, given what happened in Minneapolis over the summer, as you recall, there was a woman who was shot 5 times by an ICE officer. There were charges that were posed against her, but they were dismissed given evidence that ICE provided that contradicted everything that I said. Do you know if the city would be, or the state would be, trying to press charges or investigate that further? Along the same lines, given what happened with the apartment building on the south side, I did hear of some reporting that the property owners were, the property owners were probably less than good property owners, and there the tenants were upset, and it seemed a bit coincidental that the property owners would be taken to court, and then a few days later, ICE shows up in a a raid for no reason in that apparent apartment complex.
All right, let's get you some answers there, John.
Yeah, thank you for that question. And you laid it out, you know, quite well, particularly how dishonest this administration has been. One of the reasons why, you know, the charges were dropped is because the Trump administration lied about what happened. And, you know, thankfully, this woman, you know, was able to walk away from this awful, horrific encounter with her life still. That was not the case, obviously, for Ms. Good in Minneapolis. And so in terms of investigation, yeah, there's some exploration around how the state as well as the local government can have greater strength in its investigatory arm and then what could come subsequently after an investigation. One of the reasons why these lawsuits are so critical in this moment is because, as the court has demonstrated, it's the one place where we've been able to have some check to this administration. And so, you know, look, I'm going to continue to put forth executive orders using every single tool that I have available to me, including the courts, to be able to strengthen our ability to hold this administration accountable.
Next to Thurgood in South Shore. Hi, Thurgood. What's your question for the mayor?
Yes, good morning, Mayor. Thank you for your service, and I'm enjoying this dynamic duo. Hope to hear you guys again. Mayor, you've been called fiscally irresponsible, a socialist, a communist. That would put you in good company with people like Dr. King and Nelson Mandela. But my question is this. Recently, you requested approximately $500 million to fund Chicago schools. However, that was deemed fiscally irresponsible. But I wanted you to compare and contrast the following examples. The fact that Rahm Emanuel, as a lame duck mayor, received $1.3 billion for what is the Lincoln Park area, the Lincoln Park TIF, Kennedy and the Eisenhower Expressway. And also compare the fact that the city council had no problem okaying Mayor Daley's ill-fated deal with the parking meters, where he got $1 billion for something that was split for $3 billion. And just lastly, at the federal level, the fact that President Trump found $20 billion for Argentina. This is reported by NPR, November 13, 2025. In a currency bailout for them without any sort of congressional approval. So compare and contrast, if you will, the funds where the city council turned over for Mayor Daley in the parking meter deal, turned over for Rahm Emanuel for the his TIF, and the fact that there's $20 billion with a B going to Argentina, why our cities and our states and our municipalities suffer.
All right, compare and contrast.
Right, Justin. I feel like a true social studies teacher, right? You know, well, you know, first of all, it is evident that we have had previous administrations that have not prioritized working people, right? And one of the reasons why, you know, I've been so adamant about protecting all of Chicago is because we have seen that playbook before, and that has not worked for us when the interest of corporations and the ultra rich or a handful of people are the only individuals that are being taken care of in this city. And so whether it's the TIF surplus to go into our parks or schools, our community colleges or libraries, or whether it's the investment in our young people in mental and behavioral health care services, you know, I think the last thing that I'll say is it's why I've been so adamant about pushing for progressive revenue. You know, you've seen the Speaker of the House recently confirmed his support for the millionaire's tax, something that I've been pressing for a very long time. And there are other means of progressive revenue that I believe that we have to push that are good to ultimately invest in our communities. I mean, I think the biggest difference is, you know, my focus is protecting all of Chicago. And the way you do that is by prioritizing the very people who make our communities dynamic, and that's working people.
Chicago spent more than $250 million on police overtime in 2025, and that is more than 2.5 times what was budgeted. Why so much police overtime?
Well, here's just a couple of things. One of the reasons why in this budget we put the overtime budget at $200 million is just to ensure that we're actually proposing an overtime expenditure that is more reflective of what has happened. But we've also put a cap so that if the police department needs more overtime, they'll have to come back to me for that decision to be made. Now, in the case of an emergency, we'll do what's necessary, but we're talking about non-emergencies. The good thing is, since I've been in office, overtime has actually gone down, right? But what we have is, we have officers, of course, who are earning a better living, right? So what you're seeing is the system beginning to level itself and to set. By having this cap, by bringing down the hours, which we've had, and again, the increase is based upon the raises that I provided, which was the right thing to do for the hardworking women and men who serve our police department. So we're seeing a right trend where it's going in the right direction. The other thing is that there's some other, and I don't want to get too far in the weeds, for a long time, our police department in the city of Chicago have been quite generous in terms of how we show up for private events, particularly festivals that are being held. And in some cases, the reimbursement has not always been aligned with the type of work that we've done. So we've just assumed the costs, and we have put forth a stronger mechanism in place where that is no longer the norm.
You mentioned the trend downwards in number of hours.
That's right.
But this is the ninth straight year, though, that CPD has exceeded its annual overtime budget. So tell me more about the conversations you're having with the police superintendent, Larry Snelling, to talk about controlling the amount of overtime going forward.
Yeah, as I said, again, what was most important was that you actually have to set the budget at a rate that is more akin to what actually is happening.
So
right?
more budget from the start.
Exactly, from the very beginning. And so now we're set at $200 million. And if overtime is needed, there is a reassessment of that request. And that's a decision that, of course, that I would ultimately make. Now, of course, again, in the case of an emergency, you know, we'll do what's necessary to keep the people of the city of Chicago safe. You know, and we do have, again, good conversations with not just the superintendent, but the district commanders, who ultimately are the local supervisors that help set that, right? So there is a real strong accountability mechanism in place on a weekly basis, assessing the overtime by district. And that allotment across the city is equitably distributed in a way that holds those district commanders accountable. And again, they did a really good job at bringing down the hours, right? And so to your point, you know, these challenges have gone back several years. And in 2.5+ years now, I've been charged to rectify and solve many of the historic wrongs, even if they have been norms, to put us on a better pathway. And so far, we're doing that, right? I mean, whether it's, again, having the safest summer we had in 65 years, the fewest amount of homicides that we've had in over 60 years. Again, one homicide, one shooting is one too many. You know, a budget that doesn't, you know, fulfill the hope and the promise of building the safest, most affordable big city in America should always be reevaluated. But make no mistake about it, my administration is laser focused on doing just that. And that's why we put forth these mechanisms in a very transparent way so that everybody knows what the expectations are. And then that level of accountability is based upon those expectations and not on, you know, projections that could waver based upon the mood or the climate politically.
We're going to jump to the phones and hear from Bill in Canaryville. Hi, Bill. What's your question?
Hi, Mayor. How are you?
Hi, I'm well. Thank you for asking. How are you?
Good. I'm great. I'm going off your west side is the best side. I know you're born and bred on the west side, and that's awesome. I'd just like to ask you about why would your majority-appointed school board raise property taxes on these people, especially like the east and west Garfield Park areas have gone up from 100 to 135%. That's just crazy. And then also going on your downtown and revitalizing, we hear from the treasurer that a lot of these tax bills are because the downtown area is not paying taxes because the buildings are empty.
Yeah, thanks for that question. First of all, the treasurer is—that's not a very complete answer. The development that's coming across our commercial corridor, you know, is moving at a pace that I believe is setting us up to continue to have a strong, diverse economy. Right? To suggest that somehow the reason why, you know, local homeowners are paying more is because that there's just vacancy, then in that case, then there's been vacancy in the city of Chicago downtown for some time. You know, this is really about an unfair tax structure that over relies upon property taxes as its only means to generate revenue. And that's why I've consistently called for, whether it's the corporate head tax or, you know, whether it's the millionaire's tax, which there seems to be some momentum in Springfield to do that. You know, as far as the board of education, I believe there were 15 members who voted for that. In fact, that increase has happened every year, I believe, since about 2016. You know, look, here's what my honest presentation is. I did not raise property taxes in my budget because I just believe that the ultra rich and large corporations have to do more in this moment. Right. We have to make those investments in our public education system. We have to make investments in our parks and our libraries. And I know there were some folks who were not pleased with the fact that there was a slight property tax increase for our libraries as well. And look, it's not it's not my focus in terms of how we generate revenue. And so what I would need from you, Frank, from Canaryville, is to call on your local state reps and state senators who represent that particular community to challenge these millionaires to put more skin in the game. And then I believe we won't have to have this over-reliance upon property taxes.
Bill
in Canaryville. Frank was the last caller.
That's right.
I'm getting better at it. Thank you, Bill. Happy New Year too, brother.
All right. A caller also wanted to know what you're doing to reduce violence on public transit.
Yeah, this is a very serious issue. As we've talked about before, you know, 3 weeks ago, working with the CTA as well as CPD, the implementation of an expanded safety plan has been in full effect. And though there has been some, you know, real tragedy that we've experienced on our transportation system, there is some progress. But part of that safety plan that has been implemented is making sure that there's police surge in right places to prevent crime from happening, but also, you know, mental and behavior health care services, you know, on our public transportation system, on the platform as well, to provide that support. So with the additional resources that we are receiving from the state of Illinois, I'm, you know, humbly excited about ways in which we can strengthen our transportation system. We know ridership is up. We know that, you know, even with those high profile incidents, violent crime has gone down on the CTA. But make no mistake about it, this is, you know, of top importance for me. And as we continue to work with CTA and CPD to make sure that we're strategically deploying the surge of police officers along with other critical services on our public transportation system to help to continue to make sure that all of the working people who rely upon our public transportation system can feel absolutely safe.
Let's squeeze in another caller before I give you another quick break.
Get a little 20-second timeout.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Here's Pona in Pilsen. Good morning. What's your question?
Hello, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor Johnson, I'm a huge fan. I'm one of the 80% of disappointed people that your budget didn't pass. But my question is, we have a jewel that's inside of all of us, and it's Lake Michigan. And with the quantum computing and all the water-hungry technological advances and installations that are happening across the city, how are we going to protect Lake Michigan and our water?
Yeah. Thank you for that question. And thank you for the support. And let's continue to organize to make sure that as we go into the budget season for 2026, for the 2027 budget, that the thing that we didn't get or certain items that we didn't get, that we can, you know, continue to push for them, because that fight still continues for working people. You know, look, I believe this was a question that was raised from an earlier call from Oak Park about just the economic viability of the city of Chicago.
Yeah, it was Jeff.
Jeff, and I failed to mention that 20% of the world's fresh water is in our front yard. And so I thank you, Pona, for actually raising that. You know, I'm a part of the coalition of climate mayors to do just that, to ensure that we are not only protecting our environment, but this natural resource that we do have in our front yard, that it is used ultimately to you know, provide human need, but to make sure that, you know, in our new changing environment, economic climate, that whether it's through green or blue technology, that we're using this natural resource to help generate our economy and doing it in a way that ultimately protects this natural resource. So there's the next phase of our Department of the environment that we reinstituted with our Commissioner Angela Tovar. There's an incredible amount of work that's being done to ensure that not only is our environment protected, but this natural resource is protected, but we also use it as a way to grow our economy.
Kind of a semi-speed round here. Let's see how many we can get to in the next few minutes. Starting with Aaron in Pilsen. Hi, Aaron. What's your question?
Hello. Hi, this is Erin Allen. Hi, Sasha.
Hi, Erin Allen.
Hello.
Of WBEZ's Curious City.
Yes, exactly. I am noticing New Mexico and now Mamdani in New York City looking at free childcare for people of those states and cities. And I'm wondering if you are interested in that and if that's on your agenda.
Well, thank you for that question. In this budget, one of the things that I said when I was running and what we were actually able to deliver in this budget is that we have to take better care of those who are taking care of our children. And so there's an additional $7 million to essentially provide raises for childcare workers. One of the reasons why I believe our childcare system has been unstable is because we just haven't taken care of the workforce. Mm. So that was important to me in working with SEIU Healthcare and other labor partners to ensure that that was in the budget. That was important work. As far as absolutely free childcare, I do support it. That is something that is going to require support from the state of Illinois, as you could imagine. But it's something that I'm willing to continue to throw down for.
I'm glad Aaron brought up Mamdani because, as we saw, of course, he was sworn in on New Year's Eve in New York City. He's already announced this universal child care along with New York Governor Kathy Hochul. To me here, if you want to compare Chicago, it seems like sometimes you're finding it hard to push forward that progressive agenda that you ran on. So, I mean, real quick, why aren't we seeing some of the changes here that you wanted?
Well, look, I think it's going to continue to take a lot of work, and I'm committed to doing that. Look, you have to have partners across the board. It's why I pushed so hard in our budget to invest in childcare, particularly childcare workers, to challenge these big tech companies to put more skin in the game. You know, we want to show up for working people. I believe that, again, our conversations that I've had with the Speaker of the House, the Senate President, that there's a growing desire. Now it's a matter of just making sure that the appetite for the interest of working people is fulfilled in this next General Assembly. I will say, the plan that they put forward in New York is I think there's an excitement around it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that people keep in mind that it's a plan. She still has to go through her budget process, the governor of New York, to actually get it funded as well. And so I'll be watching that closely. But it's something that I do believe that we have to move with expediency in this city to have reliable, consistent, and affordable childcare.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear now from Zohar in River North. Good morning, Zohar. What's your question?
Good morning, and as a fellow public servant, thank you, Mayor Johnson, for your service to the city. I'd just like to ask, though, about the Bally's Casino project and what tangible measures the city is taking to make sure it does not have a deleterious impact on the community economically and otherwise, and also just general concern I have about the gambling in the budget and what measures the city is going to take to try to make sure it's not effectively a regressive tax.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent question. It's one of the reasons why I was adamant about the reconsideration of some alders who put forth some projections around revenue, particularly around VGTs, as a means to balance the budget, right? Because it's just let me just cut to it. So one of the things that we have done, we expect that the opening of this casino as early as by this time, perhaps next year. And we have put forth some safety mechanisms in place to ensure that entire footprint doesn't, lose the type of support that we needed to have with, driving traffic in that area. We also have put forth some conservative, revenue projections around it so that it doesn't become, this exaggerated hope that doesn't, pan out. I mean, I think as far as the other concern that you have just about, you know, the mental health and well-being of residents so that it doesn't become harmful. The city is working with Bally's to ensure that there are support mechanisms in place in the event, you know, some individuals or a family member finds themselves in a position where it's more detrimental of their participation than it is for their entertainment.
Thanks, Mayor.
Yeah, thanks for that question.
Next up is Renee in Evergreen Park. Hi, Renee, your question.
Oh, good morning. I was calling, I was just asking if you had ever thought about doing like an expo or a fair for parents to find out like what kind of resources are available in their community. I remember when my kids were smaller, they did like, there were free programs like Black Ensemble Theater, music classes, science classes. Just wonder if that was anything that has been considered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for that question. So there are a number of those events that happen throughout the year, whether it's, you know, preparing children who are graduating from our Chicago Public Schools for college to give them, you know, a front row advantage to our community colleges, whether it's job fairs, particularly for our young people. I know through our public schools, the parent university provides some of that support. But in terms of like a citywide effort to perhaps bring all of the entities in under one roof, I don't know if that's been done, and I don't know if it has, it hasn't been done in a while. Mm-hmm. But that's something that I'm happy to consider. What happens though is that many of these opportunities for parents tend to happen in silos, and they're good outreach efforts. But perhaps there's something that I could look into to figure out how to do something more system-wide to give more parents an advantage to see what's available for their child, whether it's through our parks so that they know the park programs that are available to them, mm-hmm. or whether it's you got a kid who's about to graduate from high school.
Good question, Renee.
Really good question, Renee.
Now, speaking of young people, the most recent teen curfew proposal made it through the City Council's Public Safety Committee last week. It would give police the power to declare a teen curfew anytime, anywhere across the city with at least 12 hours notice. Last June, a similar ordinance passed City Council allowing police to declare a curfew with just a half hour's notice. You vetoed that one. Will you veto this one?
Well, look, first of all, thank you for that question. These are very two different proposals, right? You know, the snap curfew, which I was opposed to and mm-hmm. still am, gave the sole authority to one particular individual to declare a curfew at moment's notice, right? And that just, there were some real constitutional challenges there that I just believe would have put the city at risk of litigation and lawsuit. I think with this particular proposal, especially the measure around holding social media companies accountable, and how, you know, these gatherings get ignited gives me, you know, a little bit more confidence to have more conversations, mm-hmm. you know, around this particular proposal. You know, and look, I will say it's really going to take a holistic approach to ensure that we're keeping young people safe. That's, you know, more youth employment opportunities. That's building more, you know, community centers for young people to be active. And I mean, so, you know, I don't want people to think that this is just the be all end all, right?
So will you veto this one?
Well, look, it's too early to discuss whether or not I'm going to do that. What I'm saying is I want to make sure that there's a clear understanding of the distinction between the two proposals, mm-hmm. one of which gave unilateral control and authority to one individual to declare it without any real notification, essentially. Where this one, you know, again, there's been some thoughtfulness behind it, and I'm going to continue to have conversations around ultimately how we keep young people safe, right? But what I don't want is this misnomer for the people of Chicago to believe that the only way in which we can invest in young people is through a curfew, right? And that's all. I want to make that point clear.
Yeah, and the curfew sponsor, who's Second Ward Alderman Brian Hopkins, he's claiming that Police Superintendent Snelling supports it.
Has the superintendent said that?
So is there a difference of opinion between
City Hall? It's not even a difference of opinion. The superintendent has never said that.
So that's untrue.
He has never said that in any public forum. He's never said that.
Let's jump back to the phones, Mayor. We've got David in Rogers Park. Hi, David. What's your question?
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my question. This is a very general question. I mean, as a citizen of either, you know, a country or any city, frankly, it's easy to feel very disempowered. And my question to the mayor is just simply, what would you want Chicagoans to know that they could do to make the city a better place?
Yeah, thank you for that question. Let me just say this. I believe that there are so many people who are doing that. When I think about our educators, when I think about, you know, our police officers, when I think about our volunteers, our small business owners, these are individuals, particularly our small business owners, you know, who not only, you know, fulfill their dream as an entrepreneur, they hire other people so that they can find their dreams. And so I just want to just lift up the fact that whether it's, you know, again, our educators, law enforcement, small business owners, our corporate leaders who support this effort of having more CVI, community violence intervention workers, in place, the philanthropic community that has engaged particularly around issues of homelessness. So there's a lot of that that exists. What I would just simply offer up in this moment, and thank you for that charge, is that when you see your neighbor, see their humanity, I believe that if we can, you know, do a better job, and maybe this goes back to one of the original callers or earlier callers around just block clubs and checking in on your neighbors, mm-hmm. Find out, you know, what their hopes and aspirations are. And then finally, not just like recognizing and seeing their humanity, engage with your local elected leaders, right? Mm-hmm. To the best of your ability. And then do that in a collection. Try not to go into any conversation by yourself. Bring people along. That type of organizing is what has built this city into, you know, I believe, the global capital of the world. And the way in which we have a city that works for everyone is when everyone is seen, everyone is valued, and when we engage with our common humanity.
Before I let you go, I have got to get to Saturday night's Bears victory. I'm sure you watched the game.
I did.
Yeah? Were you excited?
I was, you know, I mean, look, the way this team has, you know, has fought to not just stay in the game, but to prevail. It's a remarkable testament, I believe, to the spirit of the city of Chicago. And so it's good for our city. It's mm-hmm. it's an exciting moment to win a playoff game. And now, you know, I've already put in a call to Mayor Bass. Just let her know that we took care of Mayor Cavalier in Milwaukee. And now it's time to make sure that Mayor Bass knows why the city of Chicago is truly the most remarkable place in the world.
But in the backdrop, we hear that the NFL commissioner was just touring potential stadium sites and checking out Arlington Heights and Northwest Indiana. So is the idea of the Bears moving, especially out of state, is that feeling a little bit more like a reality?
I still think that's a terrible idea. I mean, like the Chicago Bears in another state are no longer the Chicago Bears.
But it's getting the idea is getting so much more traction now.
I mean, I don't know that to be true. Look, okay. Everybody knows my position, right? And I've, from the very beginning, a public benefit and a public use. The lakefront, as one of the callers indicated, 20% of the world's fresh water is right in our front yard. And the lakefront is, you know, a campus that is not just a stadium. We're talking about museum campus, the top tourist destination anywhere in the state of Illinois, mm-hmm. right? Only second to Wrigley Field, go Cubs, right? So what I'm saying is that the investment in a stadium is really an investment in the entire campus. I still believe that the lakefront is the best place for the Chicago Bears to be. And anywhere outside of that, they're no longer the Chicago Bears.
All right. Well, are you planning to attend this Sunday's game against the LA Rams?
I think there's strong incentive for me to be there. We'll see what's going on the schedule. The point is, whether I'm there or whether I'm on my, you know, living room couch, I'm rooting for our Bears.
That's your prediction. Bear down.
Oh, no doubt. Listen, I'm already working with some folks to develop the next Super Bowl shuffle song. Are you even old enough
to know the reference? Yes, I'm old enough.
Okay, I'm just saying. I mean, those of
us. Brandon Johnson.
Okay, all right. So, yeah, the Super Bowl Shuffle 2.0, let's get it done, Chicago.
All right, you heard it here first. That's Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson. Thank you to all the folks who called in this morning, and thank you for making the time, Mayor.
See
you next month. Thanks for listening to In the Loop. I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons. Join me here every weekday for in-depth coverage of Chicago news and culture. Let's talk again soon.